agencies may finally have a path to get over the long-standing struggle to modernize and consolidate back-office systems. A new framework and playbook gives financial managers, human resources officers, grants, and other executives a step-by-step process to move to a shared services provider. Beth Engerman is the executive director of the United Shared Services Management Office. In part one of her interview with executive editor Jason Miller, she says the Modernization Migration Management Framework is the first time agencies have collaborated on a series of best practices to reduce the risk of those back office initiatives.
We've learned a lot over the last few years, especially with the HUD migration to Treasury ARC for financial management and HR. We're learning a lot with DHS and their migration to the Interior Business Center. And all of those lessons learned are helping us to craft what is this best practice playbook, which is a series of steps or processes, templates, documents, and good best practices that will help agencies plan what success looks like, what they're actually looking to migrate to a shared service, how they're going to adopt the standard offering at the shared service center and change their business processes in as many ways as possible to benefit from that standard offering, and then ultimately what their retained organization is going to look like, how that retained organization is going to function, how they're going to benefit from using a shared service provider, and then ultimately how they're going to add more value back to the mission of their agency. Because that is essentially one of the long-term benefits of working in a shared service environment. And so the playbook really is just meant to be a series of steps, which is referenced on our USFM.gov website, which goes all the way from the planning phase and understanding what it is that the customer agency is actually looking for, what they're going to have or have another agency do on their behalf, or what they're going to retain and do within their own organizations. Planning for that, defining exactly who their provider will be, going through a discovery process or what we're calling a requirements process, and then implementing. And then ultimately at the end, again, defining what that retained organization and will look like.
At the very beginning, you talk about this came from the recommendations of several authoritative bodies, GAO, OMB, others. You also mentioned about HUD and DHS is kind of as the first ones out of the gate. Give me a sense of what you pulled from those experiences from HUD or DHS or others that maybe kind of got into some of the areas of the playbook.
The theme that is most prevalent in the playbook that comes from those lessons learned that you just went through would be the theme around change management and customer planning. Goes back to what I said around understanding what it is you're actually looking to buy from your shared service provider, what services they're actually going to perform for you, and understanding how that standard offering, what the impact of that standard offering is going to be on your retained organization. The truth of the matter is the technology tends to not be the biggest problem with these implementations. The challenges are more around how you can get people and teams and management to understand the vision of what the organization is actually going to look like, and how the organization is going to be reformed based on the use of a shared service provider. And so there is a lot of emphasis up front in our playbook around helping organizations do that work before they start the implementation. Understanding down to the nitty-gritty, you know, what the number of interfaces that they are going to need to account for. Understanding the actual business process reengineering effort. Understanding, you know, the communication and the training efforts, and planning for that up front, as opposed to planning for that, you know, as you're going through the implementation phase. And a lot of that, you know, I have to give it a lot of credit to HUD and DHS. I mean, somebody had to go first, and the lessons that they're learning, and they're kind of paving the way for others, and we're able to bake all of those lessons into this playbook so that we can keep other agencies from having to endure some of that same painful process. And so I really think that there's a lot of value from what those agencies have gone through in their journey and how that will help other agencies be more successful.
I definitely want to go back and talk a little bit more about HUD. There was obviously a recent GAO report looking at their effort. But before we go there, let me talk a little bit more about the playbook. You're trying to keep it to a point where it's very specific. Talk a little bit about the thinking behind how this was set up.
We sliced it, again, based on the processes that we've seen others already going through. We adopted a lot around the standard system development lifecycle processes. And what we did was kind of morphed that or adapted that into the environment of a shared service implementation. And so, and we actually also tried to align it to the budget cycle. And that's a unique aspect of the federal environment that seems to have been almost kind of over, it's been an oversight, if you will, in how agencies have been able to accurately plan for these investments. I mean, we work on a 2-year gap, right? And so we need to make sure that our processes here align to that 2-year window so that we're asking for the right amount of money, doing the right planning, estimating these projects to be accurate. And so, you know, they're very distinct phases. Assessment is really understanding, again, what it is that you're looking to actually transition to a shared service. For the first time, we are going to have a catalog of services broken down by functions and activities within finance, HR, grants, IT, and acquisition. And what it gives the agencies is a tool to help them go through the different processes within these functions and say, you know what, that's an activity that I really think a shared service provider could do for me. And that's an activity that I actually think we could retain in-house. And it helps agencies, again, craft what the processes are going to be and how their organization is going to work so that when they move into readiness, they can start to actually build their requirements. They can understand what those business needs are. They can do all of the planning around understanding what support they're going to need from industry, because we know there's a lot of opportunity here for industry to support these implementations. But they can understand just how ready they are from a communications perspective. Have they shared what their vision is across their organizations? Is their management on board? Do they have executive sponsorship for this type of change? And then phase two is really taking all of those business needs and all of the work that's done in the readiness phase and sitting down with the providers and understanding and making the match, deciding who the best provider would be for that customer based on all of the work that they did in the readiness phase. Moving into engagement, which is where they start to do a little deeper gap analysis between what their business needs are and what the provider actually offers in their service lines. Again, the idea of shared services is not that we're standing up new systems and we're not creating new processes, but we're adopting standards, because the benefit here is doing things in a consistent way across government will help us recognize economies of scale and simplify some of the processing. And then ultimately migration. So once you know your requirements, you actually have to start doing the implementation, and the migration process is comprehensive. It is complicated. It requires a lot of data work. It requires IVNV work. It requires some pretty comprehensive and complicated integrated schedule planning. And that phase four can go on for quite a while. And then phase five is we're actually there. We've turned the system on. We've defined success and we've achieved it. And now we're operating in this environment. And that phase five should not be overlooked, because the importance there is that the new organization is starting to use these new processes and the new systems, or leveraging the service provider in a new way, and it's helping them think differently about how they were structuring their legacy organization.
Now, as you guys developed this, this was meetings with, I think it was something like 70 different people, dozens of agencies. Talk about the way this came together, because one thing that I think the USSM is trying to do is not make decisions, not look at shared services in a vacuum. And I know we'll talk about the customer council and the provider councils later in the discussion, but talk about how you developed the framework and the playbook.
One of our key guiding principles for the office, which is that we do not want to make decisions or work in a vacuum. In fact, I think of us as a convener across government, bringing together stakeholders that all have a vested interest in how these administrative functions all operate and how shared services can help us deliver these types of services in a more efficient way. And so we did reach out to all of the providers. So it should be noted that there were existing processes in place. Everybody had their own way of implementing. There was FAME that was rolled out through the FIT office a couple of years ago. And this really does just kind of FAME 2.0, because it takes FAME and goes into a significant level of more detail. So we leveraged that as a starting point. We took all of the feedback and the artifacts and the templates and the processes that the providers were all currently using, not just within financial management with our HR providers and those who actually were starting to work on IT implementations. And we looked at all of that as best practice and absorbed all of that information to come up with what you see in our playbook today.
Beth, we've spent a lot of time on the playbook, on the framework. I want to move into maybe a broader discussion about some of the work you guys have been doing over the last year or so. And one of those areas is around the standard service level agreements. And I think this kind of relates back, I would imagine, to the framework and the playbook, because that has to be put in place as part of one of the phases, whether it's phase two or three or whichever. Where are you guys at with this effort? Do you have the standard service level agreements yet, or when do you expect to have them?
We started the standard service level agreement work probably within the last 3 months. We focused on the playbook first because we wanted to identify the key steps of the process that actually would require standard service level agreements. And to be truthful, starting at about phase two and going all the way through five, each phase requires its own unique SLA because it's, you know, the relationship between a customer and their provider is different at each one of those phases. We actually decided based on the customer survey that we did, the first one that we did across the ecosystem through USSM, we surveyed FM and HR customers. And I will say that the one thing we heard consistently from the customers that we heard both through the survey and through the customer council and just anecdotally through other, you know, kind of outreach efforts is that there are still concerns around a service level agreement, the negotiability of those, and whether or not that we have the right metrics in place. So we have, again, we kind of cast our net wide and asked for a sample service level agreements from all of the existing providers and from the customers. And we're normalizing all of that data to come up with a template. We're working with the customers to identify what the right metrics are that would be the standard metrics. I'm not going to say they would ever be the only metrics, but that would be the standard metrics for some of these different services that agencies would acquire. And again, mapping it back to our catalog. It's really critical that the base of all of what we do starts with the consistent definition of functions and subfunctions and activities within each one of these administrative areas so that we're talking about things the same way, using the same common language, and then ultimately measuring the timeliness, the quality, and the efficiency of those different activities in a consistent way. So that's the kind of the connectivity of what we're doing and how we're kind of moving forward on the SLA, again, starting with phase five in the playbook, because the O&M SLA seems to be the one that we have heard the most feedback on, and working in a draft way right now with the providers to move the government to a standard template for that going forward.
And I think related to this, and I meant to ask you earlier in the conversation, you had talked about putting together kind of a list or a catalog of services, whether HR or finance or IT or grants or whichever. Is that also part of this ongoing effort for as part of the playbook, kind of related to the standard service levels? You got to know who has the services and then how to relate back to those standard service levels. What's the catalog's situation or status?
The catalog is a result of our very first provider stat process, which we have completed, well, we will complete at the end of August. We did a data call for all shared service providers across all five of those functions back in the, I want to say it was March timeframe. We collected all sorts of information from the providers, including what services that they offer aligned to this standard list of services that we compiled. And we asked them what their metrics were. We wanted to understand, you know, kind of some detailed information about their operations, budgets, FTEs, location of where they provide their services, their list of existing customers, all of their future capital investments. Really, because one of the big criticisms of our marketplace in the federal government is that there's not a lot of transparency around the providers themselves, what they're planning to do, their pricing, and just generally their operations. And provider stat really is meant to lift the curtain and give us that transparency from a management perspective so that we can help the providers where they may need some assistance in growing and expanding their businesses, but where we can also get some transparency so that we know which issues we need to work on at a macro level to continue to build our marketplace to satisfy the customer demand. So ProviderStat will give us the basis for this catalog because they all checked the box and told us which of these services that they provided. And then the service, that service catalog will, yes, be the list that agencies can use in the playbook as they're starting to think about what they want to partner with a provider to do, which activities they would use their provider for. And then also just generally on our website so that somebody who's maybe thinking about where could I even go for certain services could actually for the first time actually see which agencies do what for other agencies. And I really think this is an important step just in terms of understanding what the shared service marketplace is in federal government.
Will this ever be made public, or at least parts of it made public? Do you know yet?
The catalog will be made public. It'll be on our website. So who does what and the list of services and starting to talk about things in a common way, that will definitely be public. Some of the metrics and some of the results and the stats, I think, yes, not this year, because this year was really more of a throw the doors open and see how much we can get and kind of understand all of the different types of information that's out there and then build a real performance management framework starting for next year, working at, you know, kind of releasing that information as we get it in an incremental way so that we can also hopefully get some feedback from an industry on what we can be doing better.
And just to be clear, the stat sessions are done with each individual provider. So USDA is a provider, Interior Business Center is a provider, you guys and OMB, and did those stat sessions just with them?
We've had 9 different stat sessions. I think one of the most interesting and revealing pieces of data from the provider stat data call was we always talk about the 4 financial providers. And while they do have probably the largest market share, we actually had 9 provider stat sessions. And that's because there are several other agencies in government who are also doing shared services outside of or inclusive of financial management for other agencies. But once you start to think about like HR and you think about IT, you think about some of the other areas where we're focusing, it does start to expand the horizon of the agencies that we're going to be part of our community and part of our ecosystem.
Let's talk a little about some of the other things you guys are working on. Customer Council, Provider Council. Give me an update. You've had meetings. What are some of the things that have come through from those meetings? And is it working like, you know, you initially thought it would when you guys first decided to roll these out?
I am so impressed. We have had meetings every month for the Shared Service Governance Board since November, which was the inaugural meeting. And the Shared Service Governance Board talks about hard things. We bring them decisions to make and strategic, you know, visionary type of work to discuss. And they for 2 hours every month, we really do kind of dig into the details and start talking about where some of the challenges are. They've really helped us shape what the provider stat process should look like. They've really helped us start to think about what we're doing in the space of HR services going forward and working collaboratively with OPM. The Provider Council has been amazing. It's really interesting just to see what can happen when you bring together a community of people who all have a common mission. And they all have common, you know, concerns and challenges and successes as well. And we're able to start to think about as a community how being a provider, how we can work together, and how USSM and OMB and GSA can really help the provider community be more successful. And the customers, we've been meeting, that council really rolled out in April, and it's been a really interesting, great group of people coming together, very positive about shared services, really wanting to help build the marketplace in a healthy way, helping to bring to the conversation perspectives around where the challenges are, very much owning that this is not just a provider challenge, that there are challenges in being a customer of shared services too. And what does it mean to be a good customer? Because it is a partnership between 2 federal agencies, and you have to understand where the responsibilities start and stop and between the customer and the provider. So we're having a lot of really introspective conversations about that and where we actually need to move forward and what problems that we need to solve in the upcoming year.
I know there's a big push for HR shared services coming or here. The GSA recently announced an RFI for modernizing the e-payroll services. So those are 2 areas. Can you give us an update of where HR is and then what should, what are some of the other areas that you guys at USSM are starting to maybe focus on a little more?
You'll see, you know, in the next CAPGOL release, the many projects that we're overseeing. There's a lot more adoption that's happening in shared services today. So, you know, my team is very busy at holding hands and getting people through the playbook phases. So there's a lot of adoption happening as well. I think in terms of HR, it's no secret that it's one of the biggest challenges in government today is recruiting and retaining the right resources in a timely way. And it is a pretty consistent discussion with agencies that this is a challenge that they all have. So we're starting to look at that. It's actually one of the things we've queued up with OPM and the SSGB to start to think about what it means to build a marketplace to satisfy some of that demand in the HR space. And my office worked collaboratively with all of the payroll providers. We're really excited about the RFI that went out for a couple of reasons. One, it's a different kind of RFI, right? We're trying to leverage a lot of the kind of the good practices from 18F and some of the other kind of trendsetters, if you will, on doing things a little differently. And instead of saying, hey, we want one system that does it all, we did an RFI that broke it out into different components to give, you know, different interested players an opportunity to contribute to different parts of the payroll process. Whether you build an app or whether you actually calculate gross to net or whether you have a cloud solution, I mean, there's all sorts of different ways that industry can really help us understand what's out there today. The truth is payroll has been a really big success for shared services, but the payroll systems, right, are becoming older and older. And at some point here, we're going to be faced with modernizing those as well. So we want to get ahead of that curve and understand what is out there in industry and what we might be able to leverage in a way to do this differently as we modernize those systems in the future.